Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me, guest Jake Davis.
Hi, how you doing?
What's going on? I heard you on Podquirt with Emilio Rosal.
Great show.
Very impressed with your range of characters, your impressions, your love of the game. Now, you started real young, right?
Yeah.
In stand-up comedy?
Officially got started around 18, but technically I was in it at 14. But I don't think you can really say any 14-year-old's doing comedy. They're just saying ideas. Someone
fucked up and gave them a microphone.
Exactly. It was more of a lot of eye rolls the first couple times I got on stage. Yeah. But, yeah.
You know what sucks about Batman?
It was... Guys, can you believe the school? What's up with this school? Am I right?
Kensington giving me homework and shit. It's bullshit!
I didn't play at the comedy store.
I want to clean my room, Mom.
That was a very inside joke that the people of Hollywood didn't really get. But, you know, it's... We'll judge 20 years after my
death. So where'd you start? You started here?
I got started at... I was mostly just doing talent shows and, you know, family parties when I was first doing it as a kid. But when I got out to college, I went to ASU and I was in Phoenix. And then I started doing the scene out there. And that's just... It's an awesome environment that they've got growing out that way.
Cool. And so you, what were some of the clubs down in Arizona that you would hit? Like, it was a good college town and everyone came out?
Yeah, great. Always great attendance. My favorite comedy club in town was Stand Up Scottsdale. It's a mid-level place, but the venue's fantastic. They've always got great acts and really a comics club.
Yeah, you can really tell, like, the clubs that take care of the comics, you know, and are nice to them on the way up. Like Flappers has been really good to me, for example.
Yeah,
they keep booking me at shows, and it's like, you know, they're keeping my shit together.
I
always have something to look forward to. Now I've seen your unofficial resume online. You posted it, you know, as a means of, you know, putting it out there, trying to build a little mythos about yourself. I just want to
This is the resume from my my fan page, right?
Well, it's unofficial. It's, you know, that's what's illicit about it. You know, no one knows quite who wrote these things.
It's true. Well, let's shoot them out.
You're usually compared to Frank Caliendo, Jesus, and Gandhi. Do you have any quotable resources where someone is like Barack Obama is like, you know, who's a lot like Mahatma Gandhi? Davis.
I was working with a guy, I can't remember his name, but he said, you know what, if this guy was born in India right around the same time as Gandhi, he would be the poor man's Gandhi. And I think that's a compliment. That's, you know, because Gandhi was already the poor man's Gandhi, so I was just real bottom line Gandhi, just dollar club Gandhi.
But you've heard the comparison made. Thus, it ends up in an illicit resume of yours.
The way that that got formed, I just kind of put it out there and let people say how they felt.
So you're the author of this document. Is that what you're?
I'm an author the same way that the person who like compiles best of lists is an author. I just put it out there to have friends and whoever write what they felt. And anything I felt was good enough went up there. This was from a while back, by the way.
Telepathic.
That might be slightly exaggerated.
Do you ever feel like you went through a period of your life, especially when you were emo, you know, when you were 14, you saw the Korn video of them using mind powers or whatever, they'd stop animation, and then did you ever get into a delusion where you thought, you know, you had power, like Dragon Ball Z style?
15 years old. Star Wars Episode 3 had just come out.
Yeah.
Obviously, everybody was really high on that because of the immense success of the first two. And I was focusing all my energy on a paper plate just to see what would happen. Breeze came through the door, moved the plate 2 inches. I knew what happened, but I called that. Yeah, I've got superpowers.
Really?
I can control slight breezes. I had
a much more lengthy delusion. I was... I met this guy who was turned out to be schizophrenic, or at least partially diagnosed as that. But, you know, he watched a lot of Dragon Ball Z and then sort of thought that he was the most powerful ninja in the world, and then tried to recruit me into his ninja gang, you know, because I went to high school with him. So clearly we were both, like, the most powerful people ever and, like, had, like, 9,000 shield points. And then we would meditate and then, like, fight, like... Like, you would he would go, you know, a dark energy needs to fight with you now. Right. So meditate, go confront that dark energy. And so I would do it and then be like, oh, yeah, I won the fight. Like there was going to be an alternate scenario. But then sometimes we would walk through the neighborhood and think that, like, shadow people were. And then I'd be like, oh, I have a cramp. That means that there's ninjas nearby. Like, I had a lengthy delusion. It probably lasted, like, 9 months or something like that to a year of me hanging out with this kid and just getting into these fucking things where we thought they were real, you know? Because we had a hard time deciphering between cartoons and the fucking suburbs we grew up on. There's shadow people following us.
That is the interesting thing about growing up in the suburbs, is every kid is so determined that they want to be interesting as a kid that they somehow create an environment in their own suburbs that things are like, oh, man, you think you come from a rough neighborhood. I got dragons running around town. All right? Who do you think's keeping those at bay? Not the cops.
That's a problem when you, like, mix Catholicism in with Dragon Ball Z, and then all of a sudden there's magic ninjas.
You teach kids early on that resurrection's possible. They're just going to get into trouble.
They're
going to
mix with the Ninja Turtles, and things are going to get fucking weird in that kid's nightmares. Then he meets some schizophrenic kid, and they're fucking off to the races. I'm lucky that he didn't fucking chop my arm off with a samurai sword he showed me once.
Yeah, there is actually a lot of similarity between Dragon Ball Z plot lines and the Bible, because clearly they just wrote themselves into a corner. We killed Jesus. What
it's
are we going to do?
Good versus evil, though. You know,
when
you
just retcon and bring him back.
If you think there's a real Satan, you know, how is that different than, you know, Igafu from Gogon?
I think it's good that there's, you know, it was definitely a solid choice making there just being one general umbrella bad guy. You know, for it kept it simple, because you look at Greek mythology, everybody's a bad guy. Zeus is good, now he's bad, he's having sex with a cow for some reason, it's okay. Bible, they figured it out, just... Jesus, God, good. Satan, bad. That's
it. There's a lot of cow fucking in the Bible, and then they're like, yeah, but you can't do this with a dude. You know, you can't kiss peepees. Watch me fucking finger blast this oinker over here. This is cool. I'm writing the Bible now. Ooh, am I getting this from God, or am I getting this from my fucking cousins who are fucking finger blasting pigs every other week?
You know, subject matter aside, from the literature point of view, how do they get... What was the publishing process for the Bible? Did they go to publishing companies? Was there just...
Yo, I got an idea for a book, right?
Listen, we love the Ten Commandments.
We want 10 figures up front, like you had the craziest agent in the world. This book is going to be fucking tremendous.
You want a sequel? We're putting it right in the book.
My apostle's not going to lick his own butthole for less than 6 figures, you cocksucker. This is the book of everything. Call me with fucking cash, you donkey fuck.
Joel Epstein, the 13th apostle that just handled the business side of everything.
He's a fucking shark, man.
He took care... Do you know how much it costs to get Jesus to come to your party and change the water into wine? That wasn't cheap, all right?
Yeah.
That was... And he did that festival gig with the fish and the bread. That was great.
Didn't that guy just come out of Vegas and he's some, like, fucking trolley car riding hobo Jesus impersonator who's got a couple tricks?
This is the episode of your podcast where we just turn the entire Judeo-Christian faith into a skeezy back alley money exchange and a handshake deal.
That's how it is. It's just the fucking mob right now run by some pedophiles up in the Vatican, you know? Chopping kids' head off for Satan and then going outside, like, trying to keep the human form and not change into a fucking lizard body as they, like, go, ew, hello, I'm, like, the best at Jesus. Meanwhile, they're fucking living in a golden palace. What the fuck are you talking about?
The Vatican is one of the most impressive buildings ever, and I've always... With this new pope, not so much. This new pope seems like he's trying to keep it real.
Yeah.
I like this guy... more. But with Pope Benedict, it was always like he was kind of laughing at us. He's like, we need to help the poor. look at my shoes. Check look at it these out. Nice custom-made shoes. You poor people wish you had shoes at all, don't you?
Check out the rims on my fucking pump mobile, bitches. They be spinning, motherfucker.
How tall's your hat? Shit's weak, son.
I got three a goblet. But they're always drinking out of goblets, those guys. How is that different than fucking rappers having crunk juice? No difference.
That's what I like about this new guy. He made a big deal. He wasn't going to wear fancy robes, and he was bringing his own. It's just a wooden goblet. It's just a wooden goblet that is this
he's
is
a
mine.
Reformist.
He's just saying, guys, you know, this used to be about the Jesus, and now it's just about the ends.
I've been running the books, and we're going through tons of cash on fucking goblets. Our goblet budget per month is ridiculous.
Do you know how much this place spends on the scented candles alone?
The
we got like 1,500 of them in this chandelier. We're switching to the twisty light bulbs.
Yeah. Hey, what did that what did that guy do? Let's reassign him. Let's reassign him. Oh, he fucking plowed a baker's dozen cheerleaders. Let's reassign that guy somewhere else and give him a fucking mustache and a fucking change his last name.
We'll send him to Missouri. They don't even know what Catholics are there. Yeah. And apparently they're totally fine with rape. It's fine.
Well, that's the biggest. That is why you cannot trust the Catholics right now. Because, okay, in your book, a lot of people are dying from plague. There's a lot of fire and brimstone, okay? If you don't come down with the furious anger and strike pedophiles in half with a guillotine on the steps of the fucking Vatican, splaying his organs everywhere, going, this is the fucking punishment if you do this as a fucking priest. All right? We are old school, and we fucking hold our guys to a higher standard. No. What you had was fucking ex-Nazi Ratzinger going, let me reassign this guy.
To put it in perspective, this is what put it in perspective for me. Ndamukong Suh gets fined $50,000 for tackling somebody too hard in football. Any given top-ranking priest just has to move for being a pedophile.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's an interesting, you know what, maybe that's, in that sense, maybe that kind of is more of a knock on Americans and our priorities, but
why do you think college football coaches, like, move around so much?
they're all having sex.
Why are they
kids?
All trading all over the place? You know, they're working there, they're working there. Sandusky stayed in the same place too long and got popped.
Oof, yeah, he, you might have just uncovered a huge ring going on here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he might be onto something.
I'm going back to your resume. contrary to MC Hammer's statements, Jake can touch this. Have you touched MC Hammer?
I touched MC
Hammer. Or his belongings?
I kind of blew his mind a little bit. He was hanging out at a Starbucks outside. He wasn't really buying anything. Mm-hmm. And you got to catch him when he's not looking, because he's ready for it. And if he sees you, he does that little fucking walk.
Every time you see him, he's like, look, you can't touch us. So it's like a game. The second you see him, try and touch him. Rub his belly, get some luck.
He just shuffles off to the side.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
I got him. I just got him right behind the neck.
Yeah.
Slapped that ab. Just slapped his abs.
Touch it.
Touched him.
Yeah.
Bam.
You know, I heard that you gain immortality if you shear him. If you get him down.
I didn't get that far.
You remove all body
all
hair.
Of his body
but if
hair.
You can, but you have to do it like a sheep.
Yeah.
Touch him.
Yeah.
That's very.
He's not.
Violating.
Not a lot of people know this about Hammer. He is just covered. Covered in chest hair.
Uh-huh.
And it's actually made of gold. That's where he got all the gold from his videos. That was just shaved hair.
This has been your resume. Jake doesn't pop his collars. His shirts get erections from touching him.
See, and at this point, I think that this were people just submitting old Chuck Norris jokes. It might have been. Because I don't know if that's an old Chuck Norris joke, but it could be.
Okay, it's coming together. So this just turned into a meme where you just solicited jokes.
It kind of turned into that, honestly. It was a lot of friends from high school. A lot of them didn't even really like me that much. I think they might have been trying to make me look like an ass.
This is interesting. The dolphins go swimming with Jake.
That
have
one's
you,
true.
Have you swam with dolphins?
That one's true. Well, I've been in the ocean, and I consider that you know, when you're, it's like being in a giant pool. I've swam with giant squids. I've swam with sperm whales.
Hey, I'm in the same water.
You've done it too. Yeah, Nobody ever puts it on their resume. That's but true. If you want to say I swam with blue-ringed octopuses, you can, because they're in the same ocean.
Oh, man. I actually did swim with dolphins.
Yeah?
At SeaWorld, they have this, like, token encounter where, you know, I mean, there's going to be 100 fat Americans who, you know, yeah, the dolphin pulls you around. That's what you want. So you just swim out, it pulls you in, that's it.
How many people did you hear say, I got to get me one of these at home?
Pull me around my pool. I'm too fat to swim.
I know it's above ground, but it's enough space for them.
There's going to be some broke-back fucking dolphins swimming around from trying to haul their fucking lard-ass Americans around their fucking pools.
SeaWorld, I've been to SeaWorld a couple times in my life. Once when I was very little, once when I was in, like, 10 to 12, and it was still kind of cool. And then again when I was, like, 18 or 19. And all of a sudden, it just kind of seems like we've... I know that it's not really this, but it still kind of feels like it. We've enslaved an alien population to entertain us.
Absolutely.
Not so much in the execution, just in the presentation. Because you can almost hear the announcer say, look at this stupid piece of shit jump through a hoop.
Yeah.
Fucker. And these, we're in charge.
Oh, man. Have you seen the preview for the movie Blackfish? It's the expose behind what's going on with SeaWorld. Let's play some.
Orange County Sheriff's Office.
We need SO to respond for a dead person at SeaWorld. A whale has eaten one of the trainers.
We weren't told much about it, other than it was trainer error.
It didn't just happen. It's not a singular event. You have to go back to understand this.
The speedboat herded them in. And they could just pick out the young ones.
This is the worst thing that I've ever done.
When Tillicum arrived at SeaWorld, he was twice as large as the next animal.
We stored these whales in what we call a module, which was 20 feet across and 30 feet deep, and the lights were all turned out.
Probably led to what I think is a psychosis.
You have this tiny little creature compared to a killer whale. Yeah. And it looks like a seal. It's dressed like a seal. And it's saying... And it's actually dominating the killer whale into performing. And one thing that instinctual predators know about is domination. Yeah. You know, they know who's the fucking boss.
Yeah.
And no matter how many fucking fish dispensers you turn yourself into to train this fucking creature... It always knows, like, you want to swim with me? I can fucking take you out, bitch. And this is what it does. It fucking takes out, you know, trainers. And they're like, eh, that's just kind of casualties of the war. But
I feel like if you get into that line of work, if you get into the line of work of being, I want to train animals at SeaWorld or wherever you want to do it, you're kind of accepting that that might be the way you die.
Right.
If you become an astronaut. We've all seen Gravity at this point. Those astronauts know at any point space can just kick up a ruckus.
Explorer's been hit. Explorer, do you read? Explorer, over. Explorer.
I wish the Gravity had been called Space Ruckus, because that's what that film was to me. And
yeah.
It's the same. It's fantastic, by the way. Go see it. But anyway, with these whale trainers... They're choosing to get into a line of work where they're picking the one whale, aside from, you know, sperm whales, that just have teeth. They could just decide any which way they want to kill you. So I think that that's why when you see other trainers talking about it, it's kind of like, that's the game. That's the game. It's like comics watching each other bomb. It's like, yeah, you never want to see it happen, but it happens.
And the thing is, like, if they train the blue whale, you know, that has those big gum things, you know what I'm saying? That would be very difficult because they would need a pool too big. But if a trainer got caught in the gums, they would have to, like, shovel it out with, like, a broom or something. Would be,
yeah, I mean, then you just got, they're just stuck in the baleen.
That's a thing in the Bible, right? Some guy got stuck in a whale.
Yeah, yeah. That's what Jonah was. That's what Jonah Job. Was.
Yeah, yeah.
He was the first whale trainer, and he just wasn't ready for the responsibility.
He didn't pick a killer whale. He picked a blue whale. He didn't get mashed to death in the teeth. He just got gummed on his way down. And then he lived on the bottom of the ocean for 8 days.
He was just able to find that gag reflex and wait for the perfect time. Uh-huh. And then just punched it. Because that's the only way you can activate a blue whale's gag reflex. Obviously, as you can tell from my resume, I know a lot of these things.
You swim with dolphins. You've swam with giant squids. You've swam with killer whales.
I've done a lot of things.
You were in the ocean with them at the same time.
And if you're going to get in the Pacific Ocean, you better learn how to make a blue whale anorexic fast. If you get swallowed by one, you got to figure out how to get out of there.
And I think we've been giving out way too many hints. Open a fucking book and connect the dots of how to get out.
Watch Discovery Channel once in a while.
It's a lot, yeah. Watch Shark Week twice. Okay. You can play 4 rock band instruments on expert level.
This is where the resume is dated. This is
that's
where,
pretty funny, though.
This is where you can tell that it was written in 2008. You know what? You know how everybody kind of lies on their resume?
Yeah.
I suck at drums on Rock Band. I've never been good at them. I can do guitar on... I can't do expert. My pinky, it doesn't... I'm being honest with you guys. You're not an employer.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I have to impress you. I can do guitar on hard, but never really expert.
I remember my cousin, you know, took in his nephew, you know, to stay with him at his house for a while. And, you know, he never really kind of found a job, but he could, like, play every single song on Rock Band without his eyes open. So
what?
It's like some people become savants. You know what I mean?
That the worst thing to be a savant in?
It is weird. That is the thing about video games. Maybe you learn some hand-eye coordination skills, but you lose hours of time that could have been productive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I think somewhere, I think every guy, maybe, I wouldn't say girls, obviously, but I think guys try and validate their video game obsessions up to the age of, like, 17. Just trying to, like, I've heard so many kids of, you know, friends or whatever talking about how they know military stuff because they play Call of Duty.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe they introduce Call of Duty 18, post-traumatic stress disorder, and really give them a taste, like,
of the VA trying to get money from the hospital.
Cover me for my benefits.
Yeah, you don't have that video game, just the fucking glory and the violence. All right,
just have them at Starbucks and the espresso machine goes off a little bit too loud and they just have a
and you just try to manage your stress and not kill everybody in the Starbucks.
It's a little mini
with
game
your training
button combination.
Make Starbucks. Boss is like, make Starbucks faster. Maintain stress. Don't fucking stab this guy in the fucking neck.
The final level is get through 4th of July with your family. That's the most complicated level. It turns into a normal Call of Duty level. But then at the end, it just, all of a sudden, it's just you're at a picnic.
Yeah.
And the ramifications are there.
Or like some Arab kid is playing touch football with your kid and then you fucking break its neck at the end.
Run in, put him down hard.
Scream America while holding his spine. Fucking throw like a javelin. That's the darker side of Call of Duty. They don't show you the results of post-traumatic stress disorder when these guys get home. I can't air any of this.
This is dark. We went to a dark place, but you know what, though? There's probably a mod for that on Call of Duty already. You can probably, the way that mods have gone in the last couple of years, there's probably already a version where it's just a guy talking to a therapist.
# post-traumatic stress disorder.
Get aware, people. The funny thing is I was never really a class clown, but I feel like on some days I wanted to be the class clown and couldn't quite figure it out. You know, I never really fit in very well in high school. And I don't think anybody truly does. Even the popular kids don't really feel like they fit in that good. Everybody's right. A little awkward, but in class I would crack jokes every now and then, and you know, it's a great introduction to comedy. Sometimes you get a laugh, and then sometimes everybody's just like, shut the fuck up, Jake. it goes back and forth. But that's definitely when I started realizing that I liked telling jokes and trying to come up with that kind of stuff.
This is my favorite time of year, not because school's back in session or because the weather's changing. No, none of that. Mostly just because of the Little League World Series. Damn, those four kids run fast. Do you think they tell tell the ones from the shitty countries that they played well enough they get to come to America? Like, I hope they do. Give them something to shoot for, you know? Aside from rival tribes. We just got real. Fun fact about the Little League World Series, the second baseman from the Chinese squad that lost in the semifinals last year made my shoes. That's funny because it's true and sad because it's real.
I wouldn't say I was the class clown. I was kind of the weird kid that people still liked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were you a jock at all?
I kind of
have a jock look about you.
I played football until this knee became 78 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I loved football. And
so you were like the football guy that kind of sometimes hung out with the theater kids?
Yeah.
And just were like, what are you guys doing?
That kind of nails it.
Then you would call one a Gaylord and push him and then run away because you didn't want to confront the sensitivity factor of being a drama kid.
The fact that secretly I wanted to do this with the rest of my life.
You're a bunch of queers. Throw sand and run.
I'm not one of you. I'm one of them.
I'm with these guys. I want to be with you.
I want
to do drama.
I just ran away screaming and crying, singing one of the songs from Hairspray. just trying to get home.
Is that what you were into, musicals?
No, I was... The acting that I got interested in at first was more of like a older school theater.
Yeah.
So, Death of a Salesman,
right.
And even Scarlet Letter, that was a fun one.
In fucking high school, I never liked musicals, and I still just completely hate them. Except for maybe The Producers was kind of funny,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, well, it's Book of Mormon.
Yeah, I'm sure that's amazing. I hear that's incredible, but for the most part, when you're just doing fucking, you know, Hello Dolly, it's just like, God damn it, it's
so boring. I feel like there's a line in the sand for me, because I know what you're saying. There's some musicals that I think are clearly just fantastic. I always value lyrics in music, and some guys, Andrew Lloyd Webber, the ability to tell a story through a song, and then do that eight or nine times throughout
right.
a show, that's impressive to me. But there is a lot of musicals that I just kind of feel are, they're almost a parody of themselves at this point.
Just like with, when I saw Chicago, they were like, oh, here comes Big Mama. Bam, bam, I'm Big Mama. And it had nothing to do with anything. It was like, yay, look, it's like, I need a plot. I need... shit, you know, maybe I'm just retarded. I need someone to be making pussy jokes for me to be halfway interested, you know, but
well,
it's like...
And have you ever felt like in film or stand-up or anything, at an amateur level, occasionally you'll find a gem. Occasionally you'll find something that's like, wow, this is really original. They've got a voice. They've figured something out here. And with musicals, at an amateur level, you might find an actress or an actor or a director who really have something. But the rest of that cast is still just 40-year-olds who are doing this on the side. And
right.
it's tough to support it at that communal level, you know? Because you want to go for your friend, but at the same time you're just like, okay, this guy has not stopped screaming every single one of his lines. This is a black box theater. There's 20 people in here. He is yelling. So it's kind of a hard thing, I think, to really get into unless you love it. Unless you would just absolutely love it. And I know a lot of primarily musical actors who are obsessed with it. And I think that's really cool. But for the casual layman, I think it might be tough to really get into that field.
Hate going to the gym. Not because of exercise, mostly just because of all the other people at the gym. My favorite is the guy who has to announce the entire working out facility that he is in fact working out. Oh! He's not that bad. The guy that's worse than him is the dude jumping around going, yeah, baby, kill baby, woo, woo. And then they jump up, they high five one, punch the other one in the face, and then they kiss. I go to a really weird gym.
You do a lot of impressions.
I do.
That's what your first thing you did to kind of connect, like, hey, I'm a legit comic, even though I'm 16, I can talk like this guy.
That was the first thing I did that was funny. Yeah.
So what, could you do a couple of...
Do you want me to do the impressions that were relevant when I was 16?
Tell them, please. Don't you do Bush good?
I do pretty good George W. Bush. It's pretty solid. And a lot of people do George W. Bush in different ways. Uh-huh. Like Will Ferrell did a great George W. Bush when he was doing a speech. When he was trying to connect to the public. Frank Caliendo, he liked to do something a little bit in between. the speech given George W. Bush, and like, crazy George W. Bush. I'm all crazy. Because to me, George W. Bush is your crazy uncle that would show up at your house 4 a.m. in the morning. Hey, Jake, let's go ATVing. Don't wear a helmet. That's for pussies and Democrats. And Condoleezza Rice just got selected, for anybody who follows football, she got selected to the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, and that's been a huge hot-button issue thing, because people are saying, oh, well, she never played football, oh, she's a politician, not a football mind, but right. she's very up on the sport, and I've just thought, the first thing I thought was, George W. Bush has probably called her 18 times, trying to get himself on that committee and just pitching what he calls mega touchdowns. They're worth 10 points and it only works if you score from 90 yards out, and it's got to be a little fella like Rudy, like some guy who never gets in, like me.
So what do you think about the concussions, George? Like, how should we
concussions are a terrible plight upon the football legends of the field, like Troy Montana and Joe Elway.
Okay.
I hate to see the great mathematical minds of these quarterbacks getting hemmed in by their brain boo-boos.
Now, a lot of people think that maybe they shouldn't wear helmets at all, because then they don't use it as a weapon, you know, when they're
flying. I'm glad you brought this up, because I have been campaigning long and hard for my new sport, ultra football. There are no helmets. Every team must wear different uniforms every different game, because Oregon's got mad swag.
So, like, everyone's kind of like their own New Orleans float. Like, they just kind of...
You didn't let me get to the best part.
I'm sorry.
It's every man for himself. It is 24 people all playing against each other in a football game.
And there's one football.
There is one football. It is one giant game of just tackle a guy with a football, punch him in the mouth. Nobody's going to stop you. It's XFL Part 2, and it's getting rowdy.
And this is where your extra touchdowns come in, your super touchdowns.
Absolutely. If you manage to score a touchdown while punching another man in the face, that's 10 points right there.
That's for your own team.
It's like Chinese checkers, but it's football.
I get it. Wow, you're a visionary.
That's what I said when I was president. Nobody let me get to my grand scheme on a rack.
What is your grand scheme? What do you think about all the wiretapping, you know, that seems to be expanding under Obama?
I'll be honest. A lot of that might be expanding under Obama, but my franchise was the one who laid the groundwork.
Oh.
It was, I shouldn't say my administration. It was more like Dick Cheney and the George W. experience. I was definitely the bass player.
You were hanging on there. When decisions were made, you were there sometimes.
Sometimes. A lot of the time I like to go into my man cave. People call it the Oval Office, but really I just drew up my ultra football designs. And
you have to, you have a lot of grandkids, and you take them ATVing at odd hours
absolutely.
Of the night.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing like ATVing through a Georgia swamp at 3 a.m. in the morning. Nobody's
when they
stop.
Don't expect it.
Nobody.
When they don't,
nobody
you can't plan for
hell,
that.
Hell, nobody expects ATV at 3 a.m. in the
especially
morning.
Especially when you throw rocks at their window, they wake them up.
Hell yeah.
In the break, I had a little pee. I walked through your beautiful house, and I got to thinking, I'm looking at the landscape, I'm feeling a little bad, because I went after the popes a little bit, and Catholics in general. And I don't hate them as people. And I want to just explain my position on this very
absolutely.
Clearly. I think that people should have many gurus, and that if you're taking your information, or you're looking to one giant corporation source of your information, whether it be the Catholic Church, whether it be Scientology, whether it be fucking Mormonism, if you're like plugged into that source, you're not, and you go, well, the truth is, if you read the Bible, you see, well, you got one fucking book, all right? They wrote more than one book. They wrote a lot of science books that contradict a lot of shit you're talking about. So if you don't have your eye on that stuff as well, you know, and taking all the factors in and having many gurus, is a lot of people who are Catholic, like, for example, I saw a shaman one time, and for spirituality, what he did was laid me down and do a guided meditation where I confronted a fear of failure demon. He cast it out. I've covered this many times on the podcast. But I felt like this meditation thing, guided meditation, I don't know if he has got spiritual powers. He also teaches Reiki classes, which is where he puts his hands over you and changes your chi, you know what I mean? I don't know what I think about any of that stuff. But what I'm saying is, how many Catholics have fucking gone to a shaman? How many Catholics have had acupuncture or talked to a Eastern healer? You know what I mean? There's all kinds of woo-woo out there. Yeah. So just because, you think your woo-woo is better because it's the only one you were raised with? Get the fuck out of here. Read more books.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm attacking all organized religions. Any center that goes, you know what? We got the fucking answers.
We're the only ones.
Read this book. That just sounds like a fucking publisher on the phone, an agent on the, it's going, this book, kid, it's got, I'm giving you all the fucking facts here. I want more money for this book, you greedy publisher cocksucker. I got Deuteronomy, two dudes in Erotomy. It's great stories. Give me the fucking money.
You like Chronicles? Wait till you check out Chronicles 2.
I'm sorry, I'm just screaming at him. Your parents are right near.
They know.
They know that we're
doing
this.
They know how comedy goes. They know what the comedy scene is.
They're used to. It's, you used to have, bands that you would practice in the garage and be loud. I can scream about being an agent. Just curse in your beautiful neighborhood.
That's honestly how my entire family pictures show business. Is just people yelling at each other. They're not that far off.
Yeah.
Fair.
So let's get a little political.
Okay.
A lot of things are going down right now. I just read this morning that the government shutdown is over, and they have they had a short-term bill. They're like, let's turn the lights on for about 4.5 days. Can we agree to that? Can we agree to 4.5 days? I cannot give these people health coverage. How about 4 days? 4 days, 5 days. So anyway, the lights are on now.
It sounds like the headline I got from my New York Times app last night was the most defeated, sad, just kind of a thank God it's over vibe to it, and it was Obama signs deal to reopen Congress and raise the debt ceiling. Obama said, quote, nobody won here. And just the way, maybe I read it a little bit too energetic, but the way that it was written was just kind of this like, well, it's over, and nothing good came out of it at all.
Right.
It was just what everyone expected to happen.
Right.
2 weeks late. And that's what this Congress has gotten to, where the only things they can solve are their own, Senate was a part of it too,
yeah.
But the only things that they can solve at all is just getting back to a -5. They'll just drop off the face of the map and then just say, wait, that was our own bullshit. Let's stop that. Now let's not fix any of the actual bullshit.
And a lot of Americans are very savvy to what debt is. Anyone with a credit card knows what fucking debt is, and they go, oh, you know what? We should get on. If I've maxed out my Bloomingdale's and Victoria's Secret cards, you know what I should get? I should get another credit card. This one's going to have 38% interest. And you know what I mean? And that'll solve the problem. Yeah. Everyone knows that raising the amount of that we can borrow is completely unsustainable.
I've never heard it compared to just opening another credit card. But that's a really good way to explain it. We just keep piling it on.
Yeah.
And it's... We basically, our government took 2 weeks off paid. It needs to be mentioned every time. Every person in Capitol Hill was getting paid.
We're all getting paid? All right, let's sneak out of here and turn the lights off.
Fall break, bitches. Let's go get drunk.
Of course it's paid. Everyone else in the state jobs, you get fucking furlough, bitches. I'm a congressman. I'm gonna run myself, I get paid. Also, Europe is fucked. And I want to easily explain this.
I don't think anywhere has got it going on right now.
Okay, this is so simple. And my man, Benjamin Forford, this fucking crazy conspiracy guy on the internet, his hair's all fucked up, his teeth are chattering.
The government in secret, now controlled by Queen Elizabeth, Evelyn Rothschild, David Rockefeller, and George Bush Sr., they recently tried to have me killed.
This guy, Benjamin Fulford, he's seen the fucking other side. He's seen the underbelly of the Yakuza. He's been there with fucking getting his dick sucked with fucking Rumsfeld. He's been in the fucking trenches, okay?
That sounds like a horrible experience, by the way.
He worked for Forbes. I made up the Rumsfeld.
No, but I mean, you just gave a, like, if the Saw franchise wasn't over, that sounds like a Saw torture to have to be getting twinsy fellatios with Donnie Rumsfeld.
I want to see the fucking movie on this guy, because it would be unbelievable. But he broke down Europe in a way that I've never heard broke down. He said, so basically, Greece has always historically been a country with a fucked up currency because all their people want to retire at 55.
And take naps.
They just want to can tomatoes for like 20 years and they'd be like, I'm fucking done. I'm eating this bread and I'm eating these tomatoes and I'm going to sleep at 3 p.m. with my dick sucked. But I don't care how fat my wife gets, I'm done. I'm done working. I'm from Greece. So that's how that whole country goes. And then...
Opa, bitches!
Now, then they try to lump... And Germans are there. I will save my money. I am going to live for... I have to eat, you know, 4.6 kilos of chocolate cupcakes to live for my retirement. I have saved that, and I am very prudent in my saving. And I know how many liters of fucking gasoline my car is. I am very efficient.
Drive at whatever speed is reasonable for you. We're all trying to get to work. That was a very weird German accent. I'm not quite on my German today.
It is 20 Uhr, and now I will make 6 grams of Scheiße. It is finished. I have finished. Now I will pack my lunch.
Their World Cup teams never look like they're having fun. They just kind of look like a clock
just
that's working
efficiency.
Correctly.
Raw efficiency. So anyway, Germans save a lot. And when you lump their normally fucked up and inflated economy with Germans very prudent, what's going to happen is they're going to still want to retire at 50. They're like, we're on the euro now. Fuck you. I'm done packing fucking tomatoes. I'm getting my dick sucked by my fat wife. I'm done. And when they do that on the euro, all of a sudden Greece has to make austerity measures.
Yeah.
And the Germans, when they go into the negotiations, they call all the shots because they hold the debt. So then it's like, oh, now Germany's running shit again? Oh, like how fucking Hitler tried to?
And correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Greece taking that a little bit too far? And now the Golden Dawn, which is a Nazi party, is gaining popularity in Greece. From what I've learned about Europeans, they knock on us for being racist, but they're just as racist, but just to other countries. Not necessarily races in particular, except for France, who really don't like people from the Middle East, apparently.
Right.
It's, I guess French...
Germans don't like Hungarians.
Really?
They're like, they're Mexicans.
See, I feel like everyone in Europe, the European rednecks all have their own Mexico.
Right.
They've all got their theory on what country is destroying their country. And I'm not up to speed enough. The one thing that they can all seem to agree on is gypsies. That seems to be the one thing that everybody in Europe can agree on is no good. I wrote a humanitarian paper about gypsies. It was a one-letter grade extra credit paper. Of course I'm going to do it. And I had to pick one humanitarian cause. I blindly picked gypsies. By the end of writing this thing, I didn't like gypsies. Because you try and look up humanitarian arguments, and all you find are, well, some gypsy guys burned down an orphanage because they wouldn't let them camp on their lawn. So then they chased the gypsies out of town. I do not support vigilantes, but that seems kind of reasonable. They burned down an orphanage. And there's stories about a blonde-haired, blue-eyed kid... getting jumped in the streets of Germany, and it happens a lot because the gypsies are still sore about what the Germans did in World War II. But at the same time, they also say nothing really bad happened to the Jews, it all bad happened to the gypsies.
So wait a minute. So back to the orphanage thing. These gypsies are hanging out outside the orphanage. They're in their drum circles. They're getting together. They're laying carpets out. They're doing headstands, and they're like selling beads like a flea market. And then they're making too much of a racket for the orphans trying to sleep at night.
Well, they I would like to assume that that is what the situation was. It was probably accurate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, and you know what? If there are any gypsies listening to this, I'm sorry. I don't mean to insult your culture. I'm just saying facts.
So you're like,
happened.
These fucking homeless mooches by the end of writing your humanities paper?
By the end of it, I mean, I kind of had to force the conclusion. I kind of had to just make up a, you shouldn't be mean to gypsies no matter how awful they are. Because they're still people. And not all gypsies are bad. I actually wrote, not all gypsies are bad.
Let's look at our own struggles. We're like gypsies. We're comedians.
Comedians are definitely the gypsies of the entertainment world.
Now, I came by your place. You know, you're having some car trouble.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I got hit. My car was hit by a dude with a ponytail. And the first thing you think when you hear that is, this guy's got to have insurance.
Absolutely.
If he can commit to a ponytail, he certainly sat down and gone through the rigmarole to make sure that he's
perfect
handled
word.
On the road. I've always liked that term. But he did have insurance, and he was as nice as could be about the whole situation. It was an honest accident. His insurance company, on the other hand, without divulging any information, I don't know how insurance works, they might be able to just like, oh, you talk shit about us, we're taking it back, read the rule book. They took their sweet time just saying that was our fault. He turned into me, it was a legal turn, and it's amazing to me how even when they were finally calling all smiles to say we're admitting fault here, they still tried to pull this weird like,
Passive aggressive,
like, well, are you sure it wasn't your fault?
You don't want to admit anything right now to make me not send this check.
But the way she did it was this funny, like, 70s TV detective, you know, a thought just occurred to me. Like, she was just about to drop, and the damages to your car are up in the thousands. Our client's car isn't even damaged. How do you explain that? Like, I'm the mechanic.
Right.
And I know that, obviously, I shouldn't say anything. I should probably just say, I don't know, and hang up. But I just said, well, you know, I don't know a whole lot about cars, but his car hit mine.
Right.
So that might have had something to do with it.
And his was a Hummer, and I was driving a Pinto. There's some physics involved. Fucking passive aggressive.
But it's, Los Angeles is the worst town. The worst town that I've lived in to not have a car. Because
right.
if you don't live in the heart of somewhere, you can't do anything.
Right.
I live in the north side of the valley in a suburb. I can't just walk to the store. I can't, you know, ride my bike to the theater. I am stuck here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a nice little secluded part of town, but it's like, I have friends who live in Santa Monica. Hey, man, you want to go out tonight? Sure. Want to drive 15 miles in 405 traffic to pick me up?
Yeah.
It's you feel guilty asking people. That's how big this town is. It's so big. You feel guilty asking people to give you a ride.
In the same area.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, I guess you would be like, if this was New York, you'd be like taking a fucking subway to Bushwick or something.
Yeah, exactly. The bus system here is very confusing. I know you can use it. I'm just not ready to learn a second language.
Are we in a cult of our own of being comedians chasing that dragon? Is that a cult? The only master at the top
be.
Is our own reflection.
That's fucking poetic. You might have actually just nailed down the deep dark secret of stand-up. But
yeah,
I think it can be a cult, actually, because when everybody starts, you know how baseball has all these unwritten rules that on any given week can be more important than any other unwritten rule. People have gotten mad at me before for saying, I just want to thank all the other comics who have come out. And somebody got mad at me for that because it's kind of like, that's kind of something that a headliner should say. And it was like, it was a 30-man open mic, and I went up last, so I wanted to thank the people who were sticking around.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like sometimes we get caught up in our own unwritten rules to the point where it prevents us from having friends. You know what I mean? So it's always kind of tough when you meet a new comic. You never know how to gauge somebody. And sometimes most of the time,
nicest people in the world and just want to be your friend. They want to talk shop with you. But every now and then you meet this one guy who's like, comedy's dead and the TV's the box that they're burying it in, man. The only real comic sacrifices a rabbit and then gets mad at the audience for not laughing at it.
Those fucking people, there's always the people that just aren't funny. And people are very good at rationalizing why they're still in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that spiral of not admitting to yourself that you're terrible because you want to be good at talking because it's very exhausting. Because you're, you know, maybe it worked for you once in fucking 1952. You stink now. You should stop. Or, you know what I mean?
Can you believe Nancy Reagan's still alive? Here's my 8 minutes on the Reagan administration.
Yeah, so there's just some people that are just so needy about it and need so much validation. And I'm guilty of that, too, for sure, of being needy. I mean, you know, me putting out a podcast and, like, you know, I'm so arrogant, I think I could just talk and it's so entertaining. That and then I pay for a subscription to Podbean so I can upload this onto an RSS feed and I have a website and I also put it on YouTube. Just because my thoughts are so perfect. Everyone needs to download what this fucking idiot from Jersey has to think. I'm very uneducated. I just read what crazy people with fucked up hair say on the internet. I don't have many sources. He's also getting nuttier and nuttier, this guy Benjamin Fulford. Like, you know, some of this shit he says, like, about Europe that I just explained is so crazy and accurate.
Does he have a theory on it?
This is important. They're planning to start World War III and murder billions of people. David the Rothschild in Geneva. Don't think you're safe in your castle there. You're not. We know where you are. We know who you are.
Tesla was always talking about inventing. He wanted to invent wireless electricity, where, you know, there was just something emanating electricity and everyone could, like, signal into it, like radio. And then, like, Rockefeller bought out all of his patents. He's like, I don't want this shit that I can't.
Edison ran a vicious smear campaign Tesla. Once Tesla was out of his patent office, mm-hmm. he was an enemy. And his campaign against Tesla's brand of electricity, it actually devolved into animal slaughter. He started electrocuting, and it was obviously rigged. This isn't what his system would do. But he started with cats and then dogs. He did a horse, and then he went straight from horse. He said, fuck it, I'm buying an elephant from Ringling Brothers, and I'm going to fry that thing with this rigged electricity platform just to make Tesla look like a crazy man.
Yeah, if you fucking stick Tesla's electricity generator up an elephant's ass, it might explode. But if you're running a vacuum or a light bulb on it, it's pretty good. Why is Edison fucking sticking electricity up an elephant's ass? He's the barbarian. He's killing the animal. It's like this weird disconnected smear campaign.
It is nice, though, that Tesla's starting to get the credit he deserves now, and obviously the line of cars with his same name is, I think, going to do a lot to keep his legacy alive.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the stuff that he was coming up with, we're just now starting to be like, oh, he had it right. This guy way back there was onto it. So, there's this new ad campaign, and I can't remember who it is, but it says, Thomas Edison wasn't afraid of failure, and just knowing all the horrible things about Thomas Edison,
he
just stole all of his good ideas, he's like the Christopher Columbus of science.
He's also like a patent whore, like Bill Gates. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like Bill Gates just trying to patent everything, every little thing. You gotta go through me, because fucking a guy on my team invented it and I'm taking the fucking money from it. That's the fucking game.
Yeah.
Where he tries to patent all computer knowledge and put out a system that everybody uses. You know,
Apple tried to get a granted, I have an iPhone, so I'm some kind of hypocrite, but they tried to patent curved edges on their phone. We could have rounded corners, and I think that might have been one of the ones they didn't get.
Yeah,
because the judge was just, are you fucking kidding me?
Isn't it? I'm just thinking about, like, how crazy money is, how it's just paper, and, like, what kind of wizards of magic turn, like, someone to, like, stab somebody else, like another human, for, like, paper dollars in their fucking pocket, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, you have a tumor in your own body, and then it's gonna cost you these paper dollars, and then otherwise they won't take it out of you. How fucking much power is that? And, you know, there's banks that own what our currency is, you know. The Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
Sarah Palin. I remember when she was running for vice president.
Oh, I remember that.
Under McCain.
Mm-hmm.
There was always, it was very known that there were handlers teaching her history.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, so, yeah, you know where Russia is, but also, these are other states. And they'd be like, the capital of this is that, you know. And then explaining to her foreign policy and cramming her with knowledge. My question is, why don't those fucking handlers run for fucking office? Who are those handlers?
It's, you know what it is? It's all the people who wanted to be politicians but weren't camera friendly. I did quote fingers for the folks
at
home.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the guy who actually can sit down. It's the like the three guys who actually could sit down and figure out this economy problem. They were just the ones teaching Obama how to look cool when he was at the podium because they just didn't have the face for it.
Right. Obama's beautiful, and I feel like, you know, in 20 years, if we keep going down the shitter, it'll be like Fabio, and he's just conspicuously reading a teleprompter. I work in an office. I had David Cope on last week, and we work at Deluxe together. And it's weird because I noticed at lunch when, you know, you go outside, I made an appointment to see you, my buddy. But then everyone else that we walked outside of this patio, we're all sitting alone with their headphones on, you know. And it's like everyone's so miserable at my job sometimes that they all just get on their own headphones and just, they don't want to talk to anybody. They don't want to see anybody. They just want to see their fucking Lean Cuisine that they just microwaved and shove it in their face without talking to anybody and going back to work, you know. And this guy sits down with us. I was just joking with him. He says that he was always reading The Economist to fall asleep. He was like, oh, I don't like The Economist, but it was just how I would fall asleep to it. So then I just started joking that, you know, he has a porno inside and that's what's helping him. I'm like, don't you get excited when you're looking at porno? So I made this joke a couple times. He seemed to not be getting it. And then he got really angry at me that I wasn't understanding what he was saying because I was just trying to joke with him.
Mm-hmm.
And do you ever realize that, like, comedians have a different way of relating to each other? Like, we met one time before, and mm-hmm. I heard you on a podcast. We don't really know each other. We seem to have a rapport.
Yeah.
But it's like some people who are not comedians don't know.
It's definitely, there's definitely that line. And sometimes you have to catch yourself where you realize that people aren't going to assume what I'm saying is sarcasm.
Right.
Necessarily. And something that, I'm 6'5" and 230 pounds. And it's very easy for me to come off like a dick. It's
right.
Very easy for me to just say something that...
bluntness in your sarcasm.
Right. And being the size I am, everybody jumps back to that one dick in high school who just threw
right.
their backpacks on the roof or whatever.
that happened to me. Oh, yeah.
I never did that. I think the visual representation I'm closest to is the really big guy that's friends with the asshole in the 80s movie.
Right,
who
right,
might
right.
come around near the end.
Yeah.
Like, he's a, hey, this is getting out of hand, Johnny.
There's always one squirrely guy who's talking shit, and then he knows he's got his one humongous friend who...
That's more or less me, but I go out of my way now, not that it's any inconvenience to me or anything, but I always want to be as nice as possible to anybody.
Right.
I ask people how their day is going. I try not to joke around too much because you said a desire to be validated with comics, which everybody who's in this industry has that to an extent. There's no way you can say you're a comic without wanting to be validated in some way. I feel like I want to be validated as a good person. I don't want anybody to ever be a friend of mine had a great quote once. He said, I don't care what people think of me, but I do care how I'm perceived, because that reflects on how you go about your daily life. So I put a lot of emphasis on how I'm perceived, and that's something that comics, like you said, joking around with the guy at work,
yeah,
we can be perceived like these, and I think it's why people have negative opinions of us a lot of time. We can be perceived as these really negative, mean, nasty, bitter people, when in reality we're just making fun of ourselves, the part of us that is that, in an
right.
honest way.
And also a comic's job is to always push the envelope and make light of things
yeah.
that are normally rough. And then and then all of a sudden these groups, these flaxbin head groups, just go, oh, you can't say that, you can't say that. Oh, you can't just,
right.
these fucking voices come out of the thing to get attention for whatever their cause is by by having no knowledge of what art is. I would like some of these people to explain their credentials in being a stand-up comic, because very few people do it. You know why? Because it's the hardest motherfucking thing ever. So you're going to talk about being an expert about comedy and knowing what they can and can't talk about when you've never gone on a fucking stage before?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And to know the balls that it takes to do that and have nothing but endless respect for it.
The one thing that people, I hear what you're saying there, but I there's also those people who they want to give you notes. They want to pass along a joke that they have, which
right.
I that never really bothers me that much, because they're just trying to relate to you
right.
and what you do. And but the thing that gets me is when I hear somebody who's never done comedy say, well, you know, it's way easier to do dirty comedy than it is to do clean comedy.
Right.
If you want to do clean comedy, that's fine. I think that that's really cool, and it is challenging. But if you talk about it once in your set, I write you off. Because you are all of a sudden separating yourself from the rest of the industry, putting yourself on this pedestal because you don't say dirty words that we just decided one day were just naughty. It's saying frick to me is the same thing as saying fuck. They're two expletives. It doesn't matter. It's the same exact message. And I think it shows familiarity and comfort for the situation you're in to use those words. So it's, you know.
And to continue a facade that people don't use these
yes.
words. And to
yes.
have any. Because you can sell Tide commercials when someone isn't saying fucking cunt monster.
I would buy Tide today if they changed their slogan to "It'll take care of your fucking cunt monsters."
Yeah.
It's fucking great.
Yeah.
Buy Tide. It's fucking great.
Or Vagisil. You're fucking cunt out of control. Is it just fucking blowing up today? Is your cunt pump popping yeast out? Like a fucking oven? Get some of this shit.
It would be the boldest advertising move since Old Spice.
Hey.
To be sure.
They would get some publicity.
They would hit a market. They would
and
find a market.
The Catholic League would be like, I can't believe that you did that.
2.5 men found a market. This can find a market. But what I, you know, and I want to clarify too, with there are clean comics like Jim Gaffigan and Brian Regan who never bring it up once that they work clean.
Right.
You don't even catch that they work clean.
Right.
And they're great comics.
They're incredible.
Yeah.
But what Jim Norton does to fucking pussy jokes is he is drawing a Mona Lisa. People have to understand that talking about filthy topics and writing high-level comedy from really smart fucking comics like Jim Norton and Dave Attell, there's a certain belly laugh that you can't get from not talking about that stuff.
Yeah.
For some reason, because we're embarrassed about it. Our culture is hung up on sex and thinks that these are naughty places, you know? So, I don't know.
And if you ever want to see...
It's beautiful, the bravery of explaining what other people are shameful for. I'm like, I get misty-eyed after hearing Jim Norton talk about his hand job experience and blowing his friend under a bus, you know, whatever he did. It's unbelievable the bravery he has.
And if you ever want to see a back wall full of comics just all of a sudden snap to attention and just go, that was good, somebody with an original dick joke.
Yeah.
If when somebody just on that rare Wednesday night just drops like, that was a good dick joke, every comic in the room for 1 second can agree on how great that moment was.
Yeah.
I think there's the important message there is I think there's validity in any kind of comedy except for what Jeff Dunham does. Outside of that, there's validity in all of it.
Taking shots. So were you an emotional kid? How did you handle relationships in high school?
What relationships in high school?
You didn't have any relationships.
I didn't have my first girlfriend until well into college.
Yeah.
Because I was, I had a hard time controlling my volume. I got way too into it way too fast. And for the few times looking back on it where there were clearly girls that had crushes on me, I was completely oblivious to it.
Right.
I just assumed they were being nice.
Right.
And
you had a self-hatred of how could they possibly.
Exactly. And I was, I was definitely more gawky at that stage, so I was I was very gangly, you know, just and you would just gawk at them. Place. Yeah,
it's like as your limbs would uncontrollably swing around you, your eyes would be fixated
hey,
on
Kristen,
their side boob.
What's going on? You want to go to the social? Oh God, I'm sorry.
I'm dodging swings here.
Senior year, I was finally starting to become a little bit more, you know, well known. People were accepting me a little bit, and one of the prettiest girls in school. Head cheerleader. She and I joked around a lot, and I was a big, you know, I was a taller guy. So in the homecoming game, this is after I stopped playing ball, she asked if I would want to be her dance partner. All the girls had asked to find dance partners for this, and I thought that's awesome. And I volunteered, and we were doing great. I was, you know, picking it all up really fast. And then one accident happened where the guy who was supposed to be holding my arm so she could do a backflip over us wasn't holding my arm, and she landed on her head and got taken to the hospital in an ambulance.
And then just reverberates in your consciousness, you want to be my dance partner? Crack. Ah! You want to be my dance partner? Crack. Ah! Why didn't you hold?
I still have never felt more guilty about anything.
Is she okay?
She's fine now. She's fine. But the moment it happened, nobody looked to the small little guy that wasn't doing what he was. They just saw the giant and the broken girl.
Right.
And I didn't mean to do it. And once again, I have become Lenny from Mice and Men in my own life.
Yeah.
And so that kind of sums up my experiences with girls.
Big man broke pretty lady.
I didn't mean. That is the perfect summation of everything that happened to me with girls. Every time I got close, I just gripped it a little bit too hard.
I was so emotional. You know, you don't know how to handle it when you don't have any perspective. You don't know what a lot of different girls are like, and all of a sudden you're seeing this one a lot, and you know, you're telling each other you love each other and you'll be with each other forever, but you're fucking 16 and you don't even know what those words mean. How can you know? And so fucking I remember my relationship was kind of falling apart as I was applying to colleges, you know, and I wrote honestly in one letter of purpose for undergrad, like your statement of purpose, describe your feelings of wanting to go. I was like, unload my heart about my fucking girl problem. And then my fucking guidance counselor, and I handed this in like sneakily because I knew it was crazy. But it was just, it must have just been a fucking cry for help. Like, I really needed counseling. My parents were like, we got it. And they were, you know, they didn't. So I needed counseling. That's what I needed at this point. Well, but then my fucking counselor got me out of, like, class one time. And
oh,
was like,
really?
Can I talk to you about this? He made me write another one where I just said nice things like, I want to go to this college because, you know. And I was, like, I was in so much fucking turmoil. I was so emotional and crazy.
Well, and that's, I think that a lot of the times we think about all that crazy, stupid crap we did in high school, but the reason why it seems so crazy and things we never want to talk about is because we don't know about all the other crazy crap each other did in high school.
Right.
We all have deep, dark secrets of that one time where you just like, I don't know what I was thinking. Yeah. And, you know, nobody ever talks about that.
I used to fucking think I was one of the Dragon Ball Z characters.
You got that out right at the top of the hour. And good for you for being brave.
I wrote some of these things down I want to get off my chest and move on with.
Is that what this podcast is? It's just you week by week going through little boxes of your soul.
Yeah, with a lot of, like, pictures with people's faces cut out of them. Like a sociopath, shit smeared as mustaches.
With a different sin written on their body. You lose your face for gluttony, Troy.
Your sin was adultery, whore. I will never speak to you again. If only I could learn to enjoy my past and not just have, like, try to burn every emotional bridge behind me because I can't handle things.
I think that's what college is. I think that's college as a whole, is just you coming to terms with a horrible person you've been since you were 10.
Isn't that what being goth is? Just, I'm fucking hitting the reset button on what people think about me. I'm gonna dress up like a vampire now.
There was a great comic I worked with in Phoenix. He's in Boston now. Jeff Wiles. He is a fantastic guy, and he and I had the most amazing discussion about what we were like in high school. And he directly talked about owning those pants with the zippers all over them.
Yeah.
And that's a staple in goth clothing, is just, I need to have just every
access to every pocket. Part of my thigh and calves.
I just need to get in there just in case, for whatever reason.
Ventilation.
This one's a calculator. I've got a compass in here just in case I'm separated from the pack.
Right.
Those are definitely a great way to get a lot of bad attention very fast. Because you never see someone wearing those out in public and think, I can trust that guy.
MC Hammer started having to hide his personables when the debt collectors were coming back, guys.
Once the secret got out about that magic body hair.
And he's like, you can't touch this, you know? You can't rub his belly or shave him whatsoever. He's a very mystical creature. Got a girlfriend.
Good for you.
Kind of a long-distance thing. She lives in Santa Barbara, and I see her mostly on the weekends, you know? I don't know if I'm going to keep any of this.
Okay, yeah, totally
so
understand.
Oh, man, I don't know. Things ended a little weird the last time I saw her. But, okay, so she's got these two little dogs, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were in the room. You know, she was had this house to herself, you know. They were in the room with us, you know, as we're getting busy. Mm-hmm. These two little dogs. And even to the point if they're on the bed, she, like, wants them. Because they're so, like, codependent, these dogs. They, like, can't be without her in the room or they'll just yap if they're outside the door, you know?
Right.
So we're having sex, and these dogs are between my legs now, and I'm straddling to kind of make everything happen. And, you know, my fucking beanbag's going up and down. They start fucking clawing at my nuts. Mid-coitus.
That is... You try and tell my precious angels what they can't chew on. I thought you were a part of this family.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much. For being on my podcast.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. I'd love to come back sometime.
Jake, this has been... do you have any shows to plug?
Right now, I have got nothing in the works. I am currently looking for a job. So anybody who's in the entertainment industry, who's looking for somebody who's confident, willing to work hard, really put in the hours and grind.
Speaks well.
Really a fun guy to have around your office. Assistant, PA, whatever you're looking for. My contact information will be available through this. That's really what I've got going on right now. Things are getting hot, buddy.
There's a lot of heat around you right now. You know? I don't want it to sound like an agent blowing a bunch of bullshit up someone's ass, but you got to hire this guy, all right? He's my golden pony. He's my special... Look at his unofficial resume. If even one of these things is true, he's got to make the fucking...
But you can catch me at the open mics at Amsterdam Cafe.
There you go.
That's a great room. Love plugging those guys. And just go out, go see some comedy shows this weekend. There's tons of great comedians out in the city.
Check out some live comedy. Go through my RSS feed and buy something off Amazon. I got a percentage from that. This has been another episode of the Highway Motherfucking Diaries in the Bag, episode 51 with Jake Davis. Thanks, man.
Hey, thank you.
Cool.
Sound of a handshake.
All right, later.